Sharply, and still in one piece. She lay down, watching the fire's embers pulsing beside her, warm as old friends. After a while, her eyelids began to flicker, then to fall. Tally was deep in pleasant dreams when the shrieking woke her.
Hunt.
At first, she thought the forest was on fire. There were flames moving through the trees, casting jittering shadows across the clearing, darting through the air like wild, burning insects. Shrieks rose up from every side, inhuman calls strung with meaningless words. Tally staggered to her feet and stumbled straight into the remains of her fire. Kicked embers flared to life in all directions. She felt hot needles through the soles of her boots and almost fell to her hands and knees among the glowing coals. Another shriek came from close by, a high-pitched cry of anger. A human form ran toward her, a torch raised in one hand. The torch hissed and sparked with every step, as if the flame were a living thing impelling its carrier onward. The figure was swinging something across its path, a long, polished stick gleaming in the firelight. Tally leaped back just in time, and the weapon whistled through empty air. She rolled backward on the ground, feeling the sting of scattered embers in the middle of her back. Jumping to her feet, she spun away, dashing toward the trees. Another figure blocked her path, also brandishing a club. His face was obscured by a beard, but even in the jittering torchlight, Tally could see that he was an ugly, fat, with a bloated nose, the pale skin of his forehead pocked with disease. He had ugly reflexes, too. The swing of the club was slow and predictable. Tally rolled under the flailing weapon, lashing out with her feet to take his knees out from under him. By the time she heard the thump of his body hitting the earth, Tally was up and running again, slashing through branches, angling toward the darkest part of the forest. Another chorus of shrieks rose up behind her, the pursuers' torches casting flickering shadows onto the trees ahead. Tally crashed through the undergrowth, almost blind, half falling as she ran, wet branches whipping her face. A vine grasped her ankle, jerking Tally off balance and throwing her to the ground. She stretched out both hands to catch herself and felt one wrist bend too far backward with a wrenching burst of pain. She cradled the injured hand for a moment, glancing back at the ugly hunters. They weren't as fast as Tally, but they ducked and weaved through the forest skillfully, knowing the way through the trees, even in darkness. The hovering lights of their torches flowed into place around where Tally lay, the racket from their reedy cries surrounding her once more. But what were they? They looked small in stature, and they yelled back and forth in some language she didn't recognize, like pre-rusty ghosts risen from the grave. Whatever they were, there wasn't time to ponder the question. Tally rose to her feet and made another dash for the darkness, aiming for the gap between two torches. The two hunters closed on her as she approached, bearded men, their ugly faces marked with scars and sores. Tally crashed between them, close enough to feel the heat of the torches. A wildly slung club caught her shoulder with a glancing blow, but Tally managed to keep her feet and found herself stumbling down a hill into blackness. The two cried out as they followed her, and more shrieks came from up ahead. How many of them were there? They seemed to be rising from the ground itself. Suddenly, her feet splashed into cold water, and Tally found herself slipping, falling into a shallow creek. Behind, her two closest pursuers tumbled down the slope, their torches spitting out sparks as they bumped trees and branches. It was a wonder the whole forest wasn't aflame. Tally got to her feet and dashed down the stream bed, thankful for the route it cut through the undergrowth. She stumbled on the slick, rocky bottom, but found herself outpacing the burning eyes that darted along either bank. If she could only reach some sort of open ground, Tally knew she could outrun the smaller, slower uglies. The sound of splashing feet came from behind her, and then a grunt and a stream of curses in their unknown tongue. One of them had fallen. Maybe she was going to make it. Of course, her food and water purifier were in her backpack in the clearing, back among the shrieking, club-wielding uglies. Lost. She forced the thought from her mind and kept running. Her wrist still throbbed from the fall, and she wondered if it was broken. A loud roar rose up before Tally, the stream boiling around her ankles, the ground rumbling. Then suddenly, the earth seemed to disappear from under her feet as she ran. Flailing through the air, Tally realized too late that the roar was behind her now, and she'd run straight off the top of a waterfall. Her flight through emptiness lasted only a moment. Then she hit water, a deep, churning pool that wrapped its chill around her, sound suddenly reduced to a low rumble in her ears. She felt herself hurtling downward into darkness and silence, slowly turning head over heels. One shoulder brushed the bottom, and Tally pushed herself upward. She came up gasping, clawing at the water until her fingers found a rocky edge. Clinging to it, she pulled herself up into the shallows, on hands and knees, coughing and trembling. Caught. Torches hovered all around her, reflected in the churning water like swarms of fireflies. Tally raised her eyes and found at least a dozen pursuers glowering down from the stream's steep banks, their pale and ugly faces made even more hideous by the torchlight. A man was standing in the stream in front of her, his fat belly and big nose marking him as the hunter she'd knocked over at the clearing. His bare knee was bleeding where she'd kicked it. He bellowed a wordless cry, raising his crude club high into the air. Tally stared up at him in disbelief. Was he really going to hit her? Do these people murder total strangers for no reason at all? But no blow came. As he stared down at her, fear gradually filled the man's expression. He thrust his torch toward her, and Tally shrank back, covering her face. The man sank to one knee before her, taking a closer look. She dropped her hands. His milky eyes squinted in the torchlight, staring in confusion. Did he recognize her? Warily, Tally watched the thoughts racing across his exaggerated features, growing fear and doubt, and then a sudden realization that something terrible had happened. The torch fell from his hand and into the stream, where it was extinguished with a strangled hiss and a puff of foul smoke. The man bellowed once more, this time as if in pain, the same word repeated again and again. He pitched forward, lowering his face almost into the water. The others followed, dropping to their hands and knees, their torches falling to sputter against the ground. They all set up the same wailing cry, almost drowning out the roar of the waterfall. Tally rose to her knees, coughing a little and wondering what the hell was going on. Looking around, she noticed for the first time that all the hunters were men. Their clothes were irregular, far cruder than the Smokey's handmade clothing. They all had unhealthy marks on their faces and arms, and long beards that were matted and tangled. Their hair looked as if they'd never combed it in their lives. They were paler than pretty average, with the sort of freckly, pinkish skin of those occasional littlies born extra sensitive to the sun. None of them stared back at her. Their faces were buried in their hands or pressed to the ground. Finally, one of them crawled forward. He was thin and horribly wrinkled, his hair and beard white. And Tally remembered from her time in the smoke that this was what old uglies looked like. Without the operation, their bodies grew decrepit, like ancient ruins abandoned by their builders. He trembled as he moved, either from fear or ill health, and stared closely at her for what seemed like an endless time. At last he spoke, his wavering voice barely audible above the waterfall.
"I know little the god's tongue."
Tali blinked. "You what?"
"We saw fire and thought outsider, not a god."
All the others had gone silent, waiting fearfully, ignoring their torches guttering on the ground. Tali saw a bush crackle to life, but the man crouching next to it seemed too paralyzed by fear to move. So she terrified them all of a sudden? Were these people crazy?
"Never gods use fire before. Please understand."
His eyes begged her for forgiveness. She stood unsteadily.
That's okay. No problem."
The old ugly rose from his crouch so suddenly that Tali stepped backward, almost toppling back into the churning pool. He yelled a single word, and the hunters repeated it. The cry seemed to release them from their spell. They stood up, stamping out the small fires that had sprung up around their dropped torches. Suddenly, Tali felt outnumbered again. "But hey," she added, "just no more with the clubs, okay?" The old man listened, bowed, and yelled out more words in the unknown language. The hunters sprang into action. Some propped their clubs against trees and split them with a kick. Others pounded them against the ground until they shattered, or threw the weapons off into the darkness. The old man turned back to Tali, his hands spread open, clearly waiting for approval. His club lay split in two at her feet. The others raised their free hands, empty and open.
"Yeah," she said. "Much better."
The old man smiled. And then she saw it. The familiar glimmer in his ancient, milky eyes. The same look Sussy and Dex had given her when they'd first seen her pretty face. The same awe and eagerness to please. The same instinctive fascination. The sure result of a century of cosmetic engineering and a million years of evolution. Tali looked around at the others and found all of them shrinking from her gaze. They could barely meet her huge, copper-flecked eyes, almost couldn't stand to face her beauty. "God," he'd said, the old rusty word for their invisible superheroes in the sky. This was their world out here, this raw, cruel wilderness with its disease and violence and animal struggle for survival. Like these people, this world was ugly. To be pretty was to be from somewhere beyond. Out here, Tali was a god.
Young Blood. The hunter's camp took about an hour to reach. With torches extinguished, the party followed pitch-black trails and waded down freezing streams, never uttering a word. Tali's guides displayed a strange combination of crudity and skill. They were small and slow, a few even disfigured, shuffling along carrying all their weight on one leg. They smelled as if they never bathed and wore shoes so poor their feet were scarred. But they knew the forest, moving gracefully through the tangled undergrowth, guiding Tali unerringly through the darkness. The hunters didn't use direction finders or even pause to check the stars. The suspicions that Tali had nursed the day before were proven right. These hills were laced with human-made paths. The trail she'd only half-glimpsed in the daylight now seemed to open up magically in the darkness, the old men who led her taking turns and switchbacks without hesitation. The group moved in a single line, making no more noises than a snake among leaves. The hunters had enemies, it seemed. After their cacophonous attack on Tali, she wouldn't have imagined them capable of stealth or cunning. But now they sent signals up and down the line with clicking sounds and bird-like chirps instead of words. They seemed perplexed whenever Tali tripped over an invisible root or vine,
and nervous when she let out a string of curses as a result. They didn't like being unarmed, she realized. Perhaps they regretted breaking their weapons at the first sight of her displeasure. Tough luck, Tally thought. No matter how friendly the hunters had become, she was glad they'd discarded the clubs, just in case they changed their minds. After all, if she hadn't fallen into the water, washing the day's mud and muck from her pretty face, Tally doubted she would be alive now. Whoever the hunters' enemies were, the grudge was serious. Tally smelled the village before they reached it. It made her nose wrinkle unhappily. It wasn't just the scent of wood smoke, or the less welcome tang of animal slaughter, which she knew from watching rabbits and chickens killed for food back in the smoke. The smell at the outskirts of the hunter's camp was much worse, reminding Tally of the outdoor latrines the Smokies had used. That was one aspect of camping she'd never quite gotten used to. Mercifully, the smell faded as the village came into sight. The camp wasn't big. A dozen huts made of mud and reeds, a few sleeping goats tied to each, the furrows of vegetable plots casting ruffled shadows in the starlight. One big storehouse sat in the middle of everything, but there were no other large buildings that Tally could see. The village's borders were marked by watchfires and armed guards. Having reached home, the hunters felt safe enough to raise their voices again, shouting the news that they'd brought back a visitor. People began to flow out of the huts, the hubbub growing as the village gradually awoke. Tally found herself at the center of a gathering crowd of curious faces. A circle formed around her, but the adult villagers never pressed too close, as if held back by the force field of her beauty. They kept their eyes averted. The Littleys, on the other hand, showed more courage. Some actually dared to touch her, darting out to lay a hand on her silvery jacket before retreating back into the crowd. It was strange seeing kids out here in the wild. Unlike their elders, the Littleys looked almost normal to Tally. They were too young for their skin to show the ravage of bad nutrition and disease, and, of course, even in the city, no one got the operation until they were 16. She was used to seeing asymmetrical faces and squinty eyes on Littleys, and they were cute anyway. Tally knelt and reached out a hand, letting the bravest of them nervously stroke her palm. She also saw women for the first time. Given that almost every man wore a beard, it was easy to tell the sexes apart. The women hung back in the crowd, tending to the smallest Littleys and hardly daring a glance at Tally. A few were building a fire on a blackened pit in the middle of town. No men bothered to help them, she noticed. Tally dimly remembered learning in school about the pre-Rusty custom of assigning different tasks to men and women. And it was usually women who got the crappy jobs, she recalled. Even some Rusties had doggedly clung to that little trick. The thought gave Tally a queasy feeling in her stomach, and she hoped similar rules didn't apply to gods. She wondered exactly where the god idea had come from. Tally had her fire starter and other equipment in her backpack, recovered before she and the hunters had started on their way here. But none of them had seen those miracles yet. All it had taken was one glance. From what she knew of mythology, being divine meant more than having a pretty face. Of course, she wasn't the first pretty they'd seen. At least some of them knew Tally's language. They might know something about high technology as well. Someone shouted from the outskirts of the throng, and the crowd parted before her, growing silent. A man came into the circle, oddly shirtless in the cold. He walked with an air of unmistakable authority, striding right through Tally's divine force field and to within arm's length. He was almost her height, a giant among these people. He looked strong as well, wiry and hard, though Tally guessed that his reflexes were no match for hers. In the firelight, his eyes sparkled with curiosity rather than fear.
She had no idea what his age might be. His face had some of the lines of a middle pretty, but his skin looked better than most of the others. Was he younger than most of them? Or simply healthier? Tally also noticed that he wore a knife, the first metal tool she'd seen. Its handle shone with the matte black of plastic. She raised an eyebrow. The knife had to be city-made.
"Welcome," he said. So he also spoke the god's tongue. "Thanks. Thank you."
"We did not know you were coming. Not for many days." "Did gods usually call ahead before visiting?"
"Oh, sorry," she mumbled.
But her response only seemed to confuse him. Maybe gods weren't supposed to apologize.
"We were confused," he said. "We saw your fire and thought you were an outsider."
"Yeah, I got that. No harm done."
He tried to smile, but then frowned and shook his head.
"We still do not understand."
"You and me both."
The man's accent sounded slightly unusual, like someone from another city on the continent, but not from another civilization altogether. On the other hand, he seemed to lack words for the questions he wanted to ask, as if he wasn't accustomed to making small talk with gods. Possibly he was searching for, "What the hell are you doing here?" Whatever concept of the divine these people had, Tally evidently wasn't fitting into it very well. And she had the feeling that if they decided she wasn't really a god, that would only leave one other category. Outsider. And outsiders got their heads caved in.
"Forgive us," he said. "We don't know your name. I am Andrew Simpson Smith."
A strange name for a strange situation, she thought.
"I'm Tally Youngblood."
"Youngblood," he said, beginning to look a little happier.
"So you are a young god."
Yeah, I guess. I'm only 16.
Andrew Simpson Smith closed his eyes, evidently relieved. Tally wondered if he wasn't very old himself. His earlier swagger seemed to abandon him during his moments of confusion, and he hardly had any beard yet. If you didn't notice the lines and a few pockmarks, his face could almost be an ugly of about David's age, maybe 18 or so.
"Are you the leader here?" she asked.
"No, he is headman."
He pointed at the fat hunter with the bloated nose and bleeding knee, the one Tally had knocked down during the chase, the one who'd been totally about to cave her head in with his club.
"Great." "I am the holy man," Andrew continued. "I learned the god's tongue from my father."
"You speak it really well." His face broke into a crooked tooth smile.
"I thank you."
He laughed, then a look that was almost sly crossed his face.
"You fell, didn't you?"
Tally had injured her wrist.
"Yeah, during the chase."
"From the sky."
He looked around with a stagey bafflement, spreading his empty hands.
"You have no hover car, so you must have fallen."
"Hover car?" That was interesting. Tally shrugged.
"Actually, I guess you've got me there. I did fall from the sky."
"Ah," he sighed with relief, as if the world was beginning to make sense again. He called out a few words to the crowd, who murmured sounds of understanding. Tally found herself beginning to relax. They all seemed much happier now that her presence on Earth had a perfectly rational explanation. Falling from the sky, they could deal with. And hopefully young gods were held to different standards of conduct. Behind Andrew Simpson Smith, the fire exploded to life with a crackle. Tally smelled food, heard the unmistakable squawk of a chicken being captured for slaughter. Apparently, divine visitation was a good enough excuse for a midnight feast. The holy man spread one arm toward the fire, and the crowd parted again to open a path toward it. Will you tell the story of falling? I will change your words to ours.
Tali sighed. She was exhausted, bewildered, and injured. Her wrist still throbbed. She wanted nothing more than to curl up and sleep. But the fire looked warm and cheery after her soaking under the waterfall, and Andrew's expression was hard to resist. She couldn't disappoint the whole village. There were no wall screens here, no news feeds or satellite bands, and touring soccer teams were no doubt few and far between. Just like back at the smoke, that made stories a valuable commodity. And it probably wasn't very often that a stranger dropped in from the sky.
Okay, she said. One story, but then I'm passing out.
The whole village gathered around the fire. The smells of roasting chicken came from the long spits held over the flames, and earthen pots were shoved in among the coals, something white and yeasty smelling gently rising in them. The men sat in the front row, eating noisily, wiping their greasy hands on their beards until they glowed in the firelight. Women tended to their food, while littlies ran amok underfoot, the older ones feeding the fire with branches scavenged from the darkness. But when the signal went up that Tali was going to speak, everyone settled down. Perhaps it was sharing a meal with her, or possibly young gods weren't so intimidating. But many of the villagers now dared to catch her eye, some even gazing unapologetically at her pretty face as they waited for the story. Andrew Simpson Smith sat beside her, proudly ready to translate. Tali cleared her throat, wondering how to explain her journey here in a way that would make sense to these people. They knew about hover cars and pretties, apparently. But did they know about specials? What about the operation? The crims? The smoke? The difference between bubbly and bogus? Tali doubted her story would make any sense to them at all. She cleared her throat again, looking down at the ground to escape their expectant gazes. She felt tired, almost pretty-headed from the night's interrupted sleep. The whole trip from the city to this fireside seemed almost like a dream. A dream. She smiled at that thought, and gradually, the words for her story began to find their way to her lips. Once upon a time, there was a beautiful young goddess, Tali said, then waited as her words were translated into the tongue of the villagers. The strange syllables that came from Andrew's mouth made this firelit setting even more dreamlike, until the story was flowing from her without effort. She lived in a high tower in the sky. It was a very comfortable tower, but there was no way down and out into the world. And one day, the young goddess decided that she had better things to do than look at herself in the mirror. Revenge. Tali awoke to unfamiliar smells and sounds, sweat and morning breath, a soft chorus of snores and snuffling, the heavy, humid warmth of a small and crowded space. She stirred in the darkness, and a ripple of movement spread out from her, intertwined bodies shifting to accommodate one another. Beneath the fur blankets, soft, comforting warmth suffused her senses. It felt almost like a pretty dream, except for the overwhelming smell of unwashed humans and the fact that Tali really had to pee. She opened her eyes. Light filtered through the chimney, which was just a hole in the roof that let smoke out. Judging by the angle of the sun, it was mid-morning. Everyone was sleeping late. That was no surprise. The feast had lasted until dawn. Everyone told more stories after Tali's was over, competing to see whose tale could keep the sleepy god awake, with Andrew Simpson Smith tirelessly translating the whole time. When at last they'd let her go to bed, Tali discovered that bed was in fact a foreign concept here. She had wound up sharing this hut with 20 other people. Apparently, in this village, staying warm on winter nights meant sleeping in piles, fur blankets strewn across everyone. It had been weird, but not weird enough to keep Tally awake another minute. This morning, unconscious bodies lay all around her, more or less clothed, tangled up with one another and with the animal skins. But the casual contact hardly seemed sexual. It was just a way of keeping warm, like kittens in a pile. Tally tried to sit up and found an arm wrapped around her. It was Andrew Simpson Smith, snoring softly with his mouth half open. She pushed his weight away from her, and he turned over without waking, draping his arm over the old man asleep on the other side of him. As she moved through the semi-darkness, Tally began to find the crowded hut dizzying. She had known that these people hadn't invented hoverboards or wall screens or flush toilets, probably not even metal tools. But it had never occurred to Tally that there was ever anyone anywhere who hadn't invented privacy. She made her way across the unconscious forms, stumbling over arms and legs and who knew what else to reach the door. Stooping, she gratefully crawled out into the bright sun and fresh air. The freezing cold goose-pimpled her bare arms and face, every breath carrying ice into her lungs. Tally realized that her coat was back in the hut, but she only wrapped her arms around herself, deciding she would rather shiver than run the gauntlet of all those sleeping bodies again. Out here in the cold, she felt her wrists throbbing from the fall the night before, and the sore muscles from the long day's hike. Maybe the human warmth of the hut hadn't been so bad, but first things first. To find the latrine, Tally only had to follow her nose. It was nothing but a ditch, and the overwhelming smell made her glad for the first time that she had run away in winter. How did people live here in summer? Tally had faced outdoor toilets before, of course. But the Smokies treated their waste, using a few simple, self-propagating nanos borrowed from city recycling plants. The nanos broke down sewage and routed it straight back into the soil, which helped produce the best tomatoes Tally had ever eaten. More important, they kept the latrines from raising a stink. The Smokies had almost all been born in cities, however much they loved nature. They were products of a technological civilization and didn't like bad smells. This village was another matter altogether, almost like the mythical pre-Rusties who had existed before high technology. What sort of culture had these people descended from? In school, they taught that the Rusties had incorporated everyone into their economic framework, destroying every other way of life. And although it was never mentioned, Tally knew that the specials did pretty much the same thing. So where had these people come from? Had they returned to this way of life after the Rusty civilization crashed? Or had they lived out in the wild even before then? And why had the specials left them alone? Whatever the answers to these questions, Tally realized that she couldn't face the latrine ditch. She was way too much of a city girl for that. She wandered farther back into the forest. Although she knew this had been frowned on in the Smoke, she hoped young gods got special dispensations here. When Tally waved to a pair of watchmen on duty at the edge of town, they nodded back a bit nervously, averting their eyes and clumsily hiding their clubs behind them. The hunters were still wary of her, as if wondering why they hadn't gotten in trouble yet for trying to cave her head in. Only a few meters into the trees, the village disappeared from view. But Tally wasn't worried about getting lost. Gusts of wind still brought smells of staggering intensity from the latrine trench, and she was still close enough to yell to the watchman if she wound up hopelessly turned around. In the bright sun, the night frost was melting, falling in a steady mist. The forest made soft shifting sounds, like her parents' old house when no one else was home. The shadows of leaves broke the outlines of the trees, making every shape indistinct, creating movement in the corner of her eye with every gust of wind. The feeling of being watched that she'd experienced the day before returned, and she found a spot and peed quickly. But she didn't head straight back, It was pointless to let her imagination run away with her. A few moments of privacy were a luxury here. She wondered what lovers did when they wanted to be alone, and if anyone kept secrets for long in the village. Over the last month, she'd gotten used to spending almost every minute with Zane. She could feel his absence right now. Her body missed having his warmth next to her. But sharing sleeping quarters with a couple dozen strangers was a strange and unexpected substitute. Suddenly, Tally felt her nerves twitch, and she froze. Somewhere in her peripheral vision, something had shifted, not part of the natural play of sunlight and leaves and wind. Her eyes scanned the trees. A laugh rolled from the forest. It was Andrew Simpson Smith, crunching through the undergrowth with a big smile on his face.
"Were you spying on me?" she asked.
"Spying?" He said it as if he'd never heard the word, and Tally wondered if, with so little privacy, anyone here had even invented the concept of spying.
"I woke when you left us, Youngblood. I thought maybe I would get to see you."
She raised an eyebrow. "See me what?"
"Fly," he said sheepishly.
Tally had to laugh. The night before, no matter how she'd tried to explain it, Andrew Simpson Smith had never quite grasped the concept of hoverboarding. She had explained that younger gods didn't use hover cars very much, but that the idea that there were different kinds of flying vehicles seemed to befuddle him. He looked hurt by her amusement. Perhaps he thought Tally was hiding her special powers just to vex him.
"Sorry, Andrew, but like I kept saying last night, I can't fly."
"But in your story, you said you were going to join your friends."
"Yeah, but like I told you, my board's busted, and underwater. I'm afraid I'm stuck walking."
He seemed confused for a moment, perhaps amazed that divine contraptions could get broken. Then suddenly, he beamed, revealing a missing tooth that made him look like a littlie.
"Then I'll help you. We will walk there together."
Really?
He nodded. "The Smiths are holy men. I am a servant of the gods, like my father was."
His voice fell flat on the last few words. Tally was amazed again at how easy it was to read Andrew's face. All the villagers' emotions seemed to live right on the surface, as if they had no more invented privacy in their thoughts than they had in their sleeping arrangements. She wondered if they ever lied to one another. Of course, some pretties had lied to them at some point. Gods indeed.
"When did your father die, Andrew?"
"Not long ago, right?" He looked up at her in wonder, as if she'd magically read his thoughts.
"It was only a month ago, just before the longest night."
Tally wondered what the longest night was, but didn't interrupt.
"He and I were searching for ruins. The elder gods like us to find old and rusty places for them, for study. We came upon outsiders."
"Outsiders? Like you mistook me for?"
"Yes, but this was no young god we found. It was a raiding party looking for a kill. We spotted them first, but their dogs had our scent, and my father was old. 40 years he had lived," he said proudly.
Tally let out a slow breath. All 8 of her grand crumblies were still alive, and all in their 100 teens.
"His bones had grown weak."
Andrew's voice fell almost to a whisper.
"Running in a stream, he turned his ankle. I had to leave him behind."
Tally swallowed, dizzy at the thought of someone dying from a sprained ankle.
"Oh, I'm sorry." "He gave me his knife before I left him."
Andrew pulled it from his belt, and Tally got a closer look than the night before. It was a disposable kitchen knife with a notched, ragged blade. Now I am the holy man. She nodded slowly. The sight of the cheap knife in his hand reminded Tally of how her first encounter with these people had almost ended. She had almost met the same fate as Andrew's father. But why?
Why, Youngblood? Because I was his son.
No, not that, she said. Why would the outsiders want to kill your father? Or anyone?
Andrew frowned, as if this was an odd question. It was their turn.
Their what?
He shrugged. We had killed in the summer. The revenge was on them.
You had killed one of them?
Our revenge, for killing in the early spring.
He smiled coldly.
I was in that raiding party.
So this is like payback? But when did the whole thing start?
Start?
He stared into the flat of the knife's blade, as if trying to read something in the mirror of its dull metal.
It has always been. They are outsiders.
He smiled.
I was glad to see that it was you they brought home, and not a kill. So that it is still our turn, and I may still be there for my father's revenge.
Tally found herself speechless. In seconds, Andrew Simpson Smith had changed from a grieving son into some kind of savage. His fingers had turned even paler, wrapped around the knife so tightly that the blood was forced from them. She took her eyes from the weapon and shook her head. It wasn't fair to think of him as uncivilized. What Andrew was describing was as old as civilization itself. In school, they'd talked about this sort of blood feud. And the Rusties had only been worse, inventing mass warfare, creating more and more deadly technologies until they'd almost destroyed the world. Still, Tally couldn't afford to forget how different these people were from anyone she'd ever known. She forced herself to stare at Andrew's grim expression, his weird delight in the heft of the knife in his hand. Then she remembered Dr. Cable's words.
Humanity is a cancer, and we are the cure.
Violence was what the cities had been built to end, and part of what the operation switched off in Pretty's brains. The whole world that Tally had grown up in was a firebreak against this awful cycle. But here was the natural state of the species, right in front of her. In running from the city, perhaps this was what Tally was running toward. Unless Dr. Cable was wrong, and there was another way. Andrew looked up from his knife and sheathed it, spreading his empty hands.
But not today. Today I will help find your friends.
He laughed, suddenly beaming again. Tally breathed out slowly, for a moment wanting to reject his help. But she had no one else to turn to, and the forests between her and the rusty ruins were filled with hidden paths and natural dangers, and probably more than a few people who might think of her as an outsider. Even if she wasn't being chased by a bloodthirsty raiding party, a sprained ankle alone in the freezing wilderness could prove fatal. She needed Andrew Simpson Smith. It was that simple. And he had spent his life training to help people like her. Gods.
Okay, Andrew, but let's leave today. I'm in a hurry. Of course, today.
He stroked the place where his slight beard was beginning to grow.
These ruins where your friends are waiting, where are they?
Tally glanced up at the sun, still low enough to indicate the eastern horizon. After a moment's calculation, she pointed off to the northwest, back toward the city and, beyond that, the rusty ruins. About a week's walk that way.
A week?
That means 7 days.
Yes, I know the god's calendar, he said huffily. But a whole week?
Yeah, that's not so far, is it? The hunters had been tireless on their march the night before. He shook his head, an odd expression on his face.
But that is beyond the edge of the world.
Food of the gods. They left at noon. The whole village turned out to see them off, bringing offerings for the trip.
Most of the gifts were too heavy to carry, and Tally and Andrew politely turned them down. He did fill his pack, however, with the scary-looking strips of dried meat that were offered to them. When Tally realized that the grisly stuff was meant to be eaten, she tried to hide her horror, but didn't do a very good job. The only gift she accepted was a wooden and leather slingshot offered by one of the older members of her Little Leaf fan club. Tally remembered being pretty handy with slingshots back in her own Little Leaf days. The headman publicly bestowed his blessings on the journey, adding one last apology, translated by Andrew, for almost cracking open the head of such a young and pretty god. Tally assured him that her elders would never be told about the misunderstanding, and the headman seemed guardedly relieved. He then presented Andrew with a beaten copper bracelet, a mark of gratitude to the young holy man for helping to make up for the hunter's error. Andrew flushed with pride at the gift, and the crowd cheered as he held it aloft. Tally realized that she had caused trouble here. Like wearing semi-formal dress to a costume bash, her unexpected visit had thrown things out of whack, but Andrew's helping her was making everyone relax a little. Apparently, placating the gods was a holy man's most important job, which made Tally wonder how much city pretties interfered with the villagers. Once she and Andrew were past the town limits, and their entourage of littlies had been called back home by anxious mothers, she decided to ask some serious questions. "So, Andrew, how many gods do you know, personally?" He stroked his non-beard, looking thoughtful. "Since my father's death, no gods have come but you. None knows me as holy man." Tally nodded. As she'd guessed, he was still trying to fill his father's shoes.
"Right. But your accent's so good. You didn't learn to speak my language only from your father, did you?"
His crooked grin was sly. "I was never supposed to speak to the gods, only listen, as my father attended them. But sometimes, when guiding a god to a ruin, or the nest of some strange new bird, I would speak."
"Good for you. So, what did you guys talk about?"
He was quiet for a moment, as if choosing his words carefully. "We talked about animals, when they mate, and what they eat."
"That makes sense.
Any city zoologist would love a private army of pre-rusties to help them with field work."
"Anything else?"
"Some gods wanted to know about ruins, as I told you. I would take them there."
"Ditto for archaeologists."
"Sure."
"And there is the doctor."
"Who?
The doctor?"
Tally froze in her tracks. "Tell me, Andrew, is this doctor really scary-looking?"
Andrew frowned, then laughed. "Scary? No, like you. He's beautiful. Almost hard to look upon."
She shuddered with relief, then smiled and raised an eyebrow.
"You don't seem to find it too hard to look upon me."
His eyes fell to the ground.
"I am sorry, young blood."
"Come on, Andrew, I didn't mean it." She took his shoulder lightly. "I was only kidding. Look upon me all you... whatever. And call me Tally, okay?"
"Tally," he said, trying out the name in his mouth.
She dropped her hand from his shoulder, and Andrew looked at the place where she had touched him.
"You are different from the other gods."
"I certainly hope so," she said.
"So this doctor guy looks normal? Or pretty, I mean? Or, anyway, godlike?"
"Yes. He is here more often than the others, but he does not care for animals or ruins. He only asks about the ways of the village. Who is courting? Who is heavy with child? Which hunter might challenge the headman to a duel?
Right.
Tally tried to remember the word.
Anthropologist, they call him, Andrew said.
Tally raised an eyebrow.
He grinned. I have good ears, my father always said. The other gods sometimes mock the doctor.
Huh.
The villagers knew more about their divine visitors than the gods realized, it seemed. So you've never met any gods who were really scary-looking, have you?
Andrew's eyes narrowed, and he started hiking again. Sometimes he took a long time to answer questions, as if being in a hurry was another thing the villagers hadn't bothered to invent.
No, I haven't. But my father's grandfather told stories about creatures with strange weapons and faces like hawks, who did the will of the gods. They took human form, but moved strangely.
Kind of like insects? Fast and jerky?
Andrew's eyes widened.
They are real then? The Seychelles?
Seychelles?
Oh, we call them specials.
They destroy any who challenge the gods.
She nodded.
That's them, all right.
And when people disappear, they sometimes say it was the Seychelles who have taken them.
Taken them?
Where? Tally wondered.
She fell silent, staring down at the forest path in front of her. If Andrew's great-grandfather had run into special circumstances, then the city had known about the village for decades. Probably longer. The scientists who exploited these people had been doing so for a long time, and weren't above bringing in specials to shore up their authority. It seemed that challenging the gods was a risky business. They hiked for a day, making good time across the hills. Tally was beginning to spot the trails of the villagers without Andrew's help, as if her eyes were learning how to see the forest better. As night fell, they found a cave to make camp in. Tally started to collect firewood, but stopped when she noticed Andrew watching her with a mystified expression.
What's up?
A fire? Outsiders will see.
Oh, right. Sorry.
She sighed, rubbing her hands together to drive the chill from her fingers.
So this revenge thing makes for some cold nights on the trail, doesn't it?
Being cold is better than being dead, Tally, he said, then shrugged. And perhaps our journey will not last so long. We will reach the edge of the world tomorrow.
Right, sure.
During the day's hike, Andrew hadn't been convinced by Tally's description of the world, a planet 40,000 kilometers around, hanging in an airless void, with gravity making everyone stick to it. Of course, from his perspective, it probably did sound pretty nutty. People used to get arrested for believing in a round world, they said in school. And it had usually been holy men doing the arresting. Tally picked out two packages of swede balls.
At least we don't have to build a fire to have hot food.
Andrew drew closer, watching her fill the purifier. He'd been chewing on dried meat all day, and was pretty excited about trying some food of the gods. When the purifier pinged and Tally lifted the cover, his jaw dropped at the sight of steam rising from the reconstituted swede balls.
She handed it to him.
Go ahead, you first.
She didn't have to insist. Back in the village, the men always ate first, and the women and littlies got leftovers. Tally was a god, of course, and in some ways they had treated her as an honorary man. But some habits died hard. Andrew took the purifier from her and stuck his hand in to grab a meatball. He yanked it out with a yelp.
Hey, don't burn yourself, she said.
But where is the fire?
He asked softly, sucking on his fingers as he held up the purifier to look for a flame underneath. It's electronic. A very small fire. Are you sure you don't want to try chopsticks? He experimented with the sticks hopelessly for a while, which allowed the swede balls to cool, then finally dug in with his hands. A slightly disappointed expression crossed his face as he chewed. What's wrong?
I thought that food of the gods would be better somehow.
Hey, this is dehydrated food of the gods, okay? Tali ate after he was done, but her curry nudes were underwhelming after the feast of the night before. She remembered from her days in the smoke how much better food could taste in the wild. Even fresh produce was never spectacular when it had been harvested from hydroponic tanks. And she had to agree with Andrew. Dehydrated food was resolutely not divine. The young holy man was surprised when Tali didn't want to sleep curled up with him. It was winter, after all. She explained that privacy was a god thing. He wouldn't understand. But he still moped at her as she chewed her toothpaste pill and found her own corner of the cave to sleep in. It was the middle of the night when Tali awoke half-frozen, regretting her rudeness. After a long, silent session of self-recrimination, she sighed and crawled over to nestle against Andrew's back. He wasn't Zane, but the warmth of another person was better than lying on the stone floor shivering, miserable and alone. When she awoke again at dawn, the smell of smoke filled the cave. The Edge of the World. Tali tried to cry out, but a hand was planted firmly over her mouth. She was about to thrash out with her fists in the semi-darkness, but some instinct told her not to. It was Andrew holding her. She could smell him, Tali realized. After two nights of sleeping next to each other, the back of her brain recognized his scent. She relaxed, and he let go.
"What is it?"
she whispered.
"Outsiders. Enough of them to build a fire."
She puzzled over this for a moment, then nodded. Because of the blood feud, only a large party of armed men would dare build a fire outside the safety of their village. Tali sniffed the smoky air, detecting the smell of searing meat. The sounds of raucous conversation reached her ears. They must have camped close by after Tali and Andrew had gone to sleep, and now they were cooking breakfast.
"What do we do?"
"You stay here. I will see if I can find one alone."
"You're doing what?"
she hissed. He drew his father's knife.
"This is my chance to settle the score."
"Score? What is this, a soccer game?" Tali whispered. "You'll get killed. Like you said, there must be lots of them."
He scowled. "I will only take one who is alone. I'm not a fool."
"Forget it."
She took hold of Andrew, locking her fingers around his wrist. He tried to pull away, but his wiry strength was no match for her post-operation muscles. He glared at her, then spoke in a loud voice.
"If we fight, they'll hear us."
"No kidding. Shh."
"Let me go."
His voice raised in volume again, and Tali realized that he would gladly shout if he had to. Honor compelled him to hunt the enemy, even if it jeopardized both their lives. Of course, the outsiders probably wouldn't hurt Tali once they saw her pretty face, but Andrew would be killed if they were caught, which was going to happen if he didn't shut up. She had no choice but to release his wrist. Andrew turned away without another word and crawled from the cave, knife in hand. Tali sat in the darkness, stunned, replaying their fight in her mind. What could she have said to him? What whispered arguments could overcome decades of blood feud? It was hopeless. Maybe it went deeper than that. Tali remembered again her conversation with Dr. Cable, who had claimed that human beings always rediscovered war, always became rusties in the end. The species was a planetary plague,
whether they knew what a planet was or not. So what was the cure for that, except the operation? Maybe the specials had the right idea. Tali crouched in the cave, miserable, hungry, and thirsty. Andrew's water skin was empty, and there was nothing to do except wait for him to come back. Unless he wasn't coming back. How could he just leave her here? Of course, he'd had to leave his own father lying in a cold stream, injured and certain to be killed. Maybe anybody would want revenge after going through a thing like that. But Andrew wasn't looking for the men who'd killed his father. He was just out to murder a random stranger. Anyone would do. It didn't make any sense. The smells of cooking eventually faded. Creeping up to the mouth of the cave, Tali no longer heard any sounds from the outsider camp, only wind in the leaves. Then she saw someone coming through the trees. It was Andrew. He was covered in mud, as if he'd been crawling around on his belly, but the knife clutched in his hand looked clean. Tali didn't see any blood on his hands. As he grew closer, she saw with relief that he wore an expression of disappointment. "So, no luck?" she said. He shook his head. "My father is not yet avenged." "Tough. Let's get going." He frowned. "No breakfast?" Tali scowled. A moment ago, he'd wanted nothing more than to ambush and murder some random stranger. And now his face looked like a littlie's whose promised ice cream had been snatched away. "Too late for breakfast," she said, and pulled her backpack up onto her shoulder. "Which way to the edge of the world?" They walked in silence until well past noon, when Tali's grumbling stomach finally forced a stop. She prepared veggie rice for them both, not in the mood for the taste of pseudo-meat. Andrew was like an anxious-to-please puppy, gamely trying to use chopsticks and making jokes about his clumsiness. But Tali couldn't bring herself to smile. The chill that had seeped into her bones while he was out looking for revenge hadn't gone away. Of course, it wasn't completely fair being upset.